today on the Luxury Home Insider podcast, I'm very excited to have Jason Pate on the show. In 2005, Jason founded a boutique building and design practice on the Gold Coast. His company, Jason Pate Design, offers clients a completely customized property design and documentation process. And Jason's projects range from prestigious luxury waterfront homes, inner city, suburban and rural homes, bespoke residential renovations, and also multi-story residential villas, townhouses and apartments Australia-wide. Jason shares his innovative designs on social media and has attracted tens of thousands of followers. It's a great privilege for us to have Jason's unique perspective on the luxury property market with us today. Jason, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks, Brandon. How are you?
Really good. Really good. So you're saying to me earlier, you've been out looking at a new project. Is it early stages? Is it underway? What status is this new project on?
New project's concept stage at this very moment. We just went out to have a look at the block. Out of Tullabudra Valley, beautiful views.
So that going to the site starts off that design process, does it? So that's, and you physically go there if you can. Obviously, if it's local, you want to get on site so you can make sure that design specifically suits the views and all those characteristics.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll always do a site inspection just to, obviously, views and breezes, solar orientation, they're probably the three keys to ensure that we can design a house that is best for the elements. We've done everything from, as you say, acreage sites out there to canal front, riverfront type stuff in the city. And we are spreading further and wider. I'm actually up in Airlie Beach for a job tomorrow. So, it's certainly going well at the moment.
So that Airlie Beach, that's a site inspection as well. So that's still early days, concept phase. You're physically going to go out to the site, and that's a standard part of your design process to make sure you include that that site visit?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. So I'll actually look at two new jobs up in Airlie Beach tomorrow, and I'll actually go and have a look at a few sites that we have underway, so varying stages of the builds. That's a little bit of a bonus for me, the through construction stage while I'm up there. We would probably have four or five jobs on in Airlie Beach and Mackay running it. So one of our little hotspots, I guess you'd call it, work with a good builder up there who's been a sort of a client of mine for probably the last 10 to 12 years. Service a lot of his clients. And then obviously things are spreading into different states and just further and wider as we speak.
So I'd imagine your business, like real estate, it would be a relationship business where, you know, you do a great job designing a project for, like you said, a builder, and then it's that repeat work that kind of keeps your business growing?
Yeah, when I started my business, I actually targeted builders, real estate agents as probably my key clients. They're almost at the coalface sooner than I am. A lot of my very initial clients, and this goes back nearly 20 years, were probably the type of client who had an idea of doing a renovation, they'd call a builder rather than call a designer or an architect. So it's an interesting one, but you look after a builder and you get plenty of referral work. Obviously, they've got existing clients or an existing, bunch of friends of that client who are looking to do something themselves. So they are a good source of referrals, as are real estate agents. They're selling homes that are ready to be knocked over or renovated. So looking after those sort of key, I suppose, parts of the market was always a bit of a strategy.
Yeah, I sold a property down at Palm Beach, and that particular buyer, he was, you know, small developer, and he was going through that process. So at that stage, that's when you want to get that referral right, nice and early as the property's transacting. So it gives you that best opportunity to perhaps contribute to that design process. Properties in Airlie Beach, are they single homes? Are they multi-story? What are the properties that you're looking at up there?
All single homes. 90% of our work these days would be single home. We obviously do a lot of, say, villa projects or, the odd unit project here and there. But 90% of our work would be the prestige home market now.
Yeah, so value 2 to 5 million, 5 million plus end product? What sort of value?
You're probably bang on with the 2 to 5 would be the majority of the homes. We certainly don't turn away under that. We're doing homes the 1.5, 1.6 mark where we can. Crazily enough, after COVID, it's actually been quite difficult to stack home, you know, custom designed homes up to those numbers. You know, reel back to 2019, 1.5 million was a really healthy budget. Fortunately, it isn't these days. And then outside of that 2 to 5 mark, we've probably got 6 to 10 homes on that probably are anywhere from 6 to 12 million. We're slowly sort of working our way up to bigger budgets, bigger projects, but we certainly don't want to let go of that lower end. We know that that's always going to be a strong part of the market. We'd be silly to just pretend that we're only going to do very, very high end.
Yeah, because I'd imagine the majority of homes out there, the bread and butter, the bulk of the market sort of in that range. So certainly, I think, you know, people that that are sort of in that price range, they still want to have something that is unique and not just a cookie cutter design, and perhaps engaging the services of yourself and give them that sort of personalized touch.
Yeah, I think over the last, say, 5 to 10 years, I think we are, as a nation, becoming more house proud. And so there's a place for the cookie cutter designs, don't get me wrong, but I think a lot of people are striving for a custom home with their own kind of personality. And I think it's really kind of made the industry that essentially us, or the part of the industry I sit in, a really, really busy one.
Tell us about the home that you've designed and worked through from beginning, middle to end, that you're the most excited about, most proud about, or the home that's really sticks out in your mind, that was perhaps one of your favorites.
Yeah, I think I'd lean towards Dahlia Estate. It'll probably be a home that a lot of your listeners will know of. There was a huge amount of marketing. It was a photo shoot location at times, which obviously then floods social media. It's also a very stunning home, and sort of one of a kind in a way. So I think it would, in my mind, it's definitely one of my favourites I've been involved in. The builder on the project was actually the client as well. And so that was Ross Henkin of Henkin Building. He now picks up work for our clients from time to time. I was very, very impressed by him, just his approach to the whole lot, the time frames he was able to build it in, the budget he was able to build it for. And then, you know, it was the whole process from not only obviously concept design through to construction drawings for us, but just the whole story of him, his family moving out there, then going on to selling. And obviously, I think they've almost doubled the suburb record for the sale price only in the last couple of months. So just an incredible process start to finish for incredible people. So
it was called Dahlia Estate, did you say?
Dahlia Estate, yeah. Have look it up. Tullabudra Valley, beautiful boomerang-shaped sort of home, made from, say, concrete and look-alike timber, so aluminium that looks like timber battens.
Is that it's on an elevated lot and it's got that, and it just went to auction just before Christmas?
Exactly.
I know the prop. Wow, yes, that's a really cool property.
Yeah, so super incredible. So that's a bit of a hero piece for us currently. In saying that, there's quite a number of other hero projects that we've been involved with, a lot finishing currently. You could rattle off 5 or 10 of them pretty quickly. And then just the exciting part of what's on our books even coming through that aren't at construction stage yet. All of that just obviously shows that the business itself is obviously still growing, and as these homes are finished, the portfolio will just look even more amazing. Exciting times ahead.
And you're right, that property really popped on social media. The agent did a big marketing campaign. I think it was featured by some other publications as well as being this gorgeous home that it is. And I think as that awareness grows and, you know, your awareness grows off the back of that. So that's really fantastic. If you could build your own personal dream home, no cost, you know, money's no object, where are you going to build it, mate? Where's your dream home going to be?
I would say the Gold Coast, crazily enough.
Yeah, Gold Coast, yeah.
Absolute lover of the Gold Coast. I would say the weather is we've got such a great climate here. We have beautiful winters. Obviously this summer hasn't been the greatest with humidity and rain, and most people would say the same. But I wouldn't live anywhere else. So maybe north toward Monaco Street, you know, your Hedges or Jefferson Lane. You could take your pick out of some of those and I'd be pretty happy.
So on the beach?
Or north toward Main River. And when I say north water, I'm a real big advocate for that orientation when we talk of water. So, you know, if we're talking dream, I'd be facing north.
The rear of the property facing north?
Yeah, absolutely. So waterfront facing north, rear.
Yes.
You know, yep. So, yep. But yep. Essentially, you want your living spaces on that northern side.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, fantastic. And what sort of style would it be? So would it be that, like you said, Dahlia, that's kind of a lot of glass, flat roof sort of style, or is it going to be that that quintessential sort of new coastal style that I'm seeing coming through in your designs? What sort of style would it be for your dream home north on water on that main river?
Personally, I grew up in Melbourne, so I've got a little bit of that darker, moodier sort of feel to me personally. It would be a lot more like Dahlia, concrete, timber to warm it up, full height glass, you know, that is me down to a T. Client-wise, we work with any budget, any design style, and very much it's also been a tactic of mine to never be pigeonholed as a designer who only does X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, of course. And I see that with your work when you're posting your content, the properties that are flowing through, I'm seeing all these sort of varied sort of style. That's why I sort of was curious for you personally, for your own home, what is it that strikes a chord for your place? So that kind of like polished concrete, timber, bold kind of a little bit more industrial kind of thing is more your style? You personally?
I call it almost brutalist and masculine.
Yep.
Personal style is that. But I would say that's a 5% of the market. We don't do as many as I would love to. I love it when a client comes to me with that brief. But to be honest, 90% of the market wants white, bright, coastal, you know. I get it.
These days?
It works. It sells well. It's not offensive to anybody. So by all means, we've created a brand off the back of a lot of those homes, and we'll continue to do so.
When I'm chatting with my wife about, you know, what our dream home's going to be, mine is very much like that style. It's basically Dahlia, but shrunken down, not as huge. It's that, as you said, that full, you know, height glass, polished concrete, you know, no real internal walls, just big open spaces. Polished concrete, exposed brick, really kind of that masculine, brutalist style that you explained. But then my wife, she's on the full other end where she's very boho. She's kind of like, you know, just in a completely different spectrum. So how do you get that with your clients when you're getting this mixed message from husbands and wives saying, I want this, but I want that, and I want to have a room that's boho or this or that? How do you sort of navigate that when you're working with a new client?
It can be tough. We can play counsellor from time to time.
Right, I bet, yeah.
Yeah, I've certainly sat in between a couple of arguments through the years.
Okay, yeah.
Essentially blending the two, so the two people's sort of mindsets into something cohesive for them is definitely where I try to start. Sometimes one partner wins out, whether it's you know, the wife's more house proud than the husband, so the wife sort of gets more of what she wants. Sometimes the husband pays the bills, so the husband gets more of what he wants. This is being very quintessential, and it doesn't have to be that way. But at the end of the day, generally it's a blend of both, and seeing where we can land that essentially appeases both people and obviously impresses both people too.
Yeah, for sure. I'd imagine when I was sort of preparing for our interview, that was one thing that was rattling around in my mind. I was thinking, you know, I was trying to put myself in your shoes and the things you have to deal with. I thought, oh, that would be a tough one, especially if it was me and my wife, because like we'd be bickering while we were sitting in the, like you said, in the meeting, we'd be kind of like, hashing it out what we want. But tell us, what do you do to keep your ideas fresh? Where do you get inspiration from? So for example, you know, I like to travel a lot. Me and my wife, we go to Bali heaps. When we go to Bali, we see a lot of new, fresh stuff in the way that they do their villas and properties, how they can cram a lot of house into a small space and things like that. And that gives us ideas and things. Where do you get your inspo from to keep your ideas fresh?
Mainly online. So I subscribe to, you know, worldwide blogs. And I think back in the, say, call it early 2000s, travel was your number one key to finding new ideas and new flavors and whatever. I think the danger of social media and all this blogging these days is that the whole world's design styles are starting to morph into a mix of everything, because everything's so instant. Everything's in front of you, no matter where it is in the world. You don't no longer need to travel somewhere to find a beautiful home or a beautiful new style. I think that was part of one of the great parts of traveling, is bringing back new ideas, where nowadays ideas are right there in front of you always. So I don't need to travel. I don't need to subscribe to some pretty out there magazines anymore. So it's probably your Instagrams, your Arc Dailies, your local project, you know, a couple of those sites are really kind of at the forefront of what is the latest, greatest architecture around.
Yeah, and you only really need to scroll the next, you know, a flick of your thumb, and you got all this new ideas and all this fresh stuff. And everyone, I suppose, for Instagram is putting the best of their best work out there for you to see. I guess the only real difference is you don't get to touch it and feel it and live in those spaces, but you know, obviously you're an expert at what you do, you can visualize that quite easily. So you said that you're really into that brutalist style. What's your feelings about, like, here on the Gold Coast, we've got a lot of these older homes that are you know, that European sort of style, like in like old Sovereign Island and also sort of some of the older stuff in Broadbeach. How do you go when you're sort of working with that, trying to bring that back to life or to revitalize some of these older style homes?
But lucky at the moment, modern Mediterranean's a real kind of on trend style. So some of these, you know, you can really work with the character of the existing home and almost play on the charm of it.
These are the arches and things that have sort of went out. Now all of a sudden arches are back, and so you can sort of play with those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I always like to, if we're talking renovation of an existing home, actually working with the existing and almost bringing the best out of it is better than trying to hide what it used to be.
Yes.
In the office here, we use the term lipstick on a pig. You don't want to kind of get into that where no matter how many design elements you throw on something, that it just becomes a bit of a mess. So and then the other part there is renovation costs these days are so close to new home costs that unfortunately a lot of these older homes are actually better off knocked over. It seems crazy because some of them are better, right. Cool, but that's the world we're living in.
Yeah, I see. And I had a guest, I had Jamie Zhu on the show last month, and he is right into, he's from, he loves his time living in Victoria, so in Toorak, where they have the, you know, the low set European style homes with the really established gardens, big grassed areas. They're worth 10, 20, 30 million on these big blocks. And he was saying about, he went to a very wealthy gentleman's property, and it was in that sort of older European style, but it had this beautiful facelift that made it gorgeous and really homely. And I went back and I watched the video of the tour of the property, and I think it was exactly that, where as you mentioned, rather than trying to hide these features, they kind of just brought them back out but added this, still this lovely element of modern through the kitchens and the bathrooms, but the framework of the home itself, and they just freshened the colors. I were able to make it look stunning again. So that's some of the work that you do when a client needs that or would prefer that type of work?
Yeah, when we're talking renovation, it is certainly an option. The business now is very heavily based on new homes, but that's not saying we don't do renovation. So the few renovations that we do pick up, always an option for us to see what we can maintain, how we can improve, and then obviously working towards whatever the client's budget might be. There's only so far you can take something without stretching the budget too far.
What are some of the trends that you're seeing at the moment for those clients that have big budgets, that they really want to push the envelope of fresh and new? What are the trends you're seeing in that space in terms of the architecture and also the internal fit outs of these properties?
So biggest wish list item on people's tips of people's tongues at the moment is probably a wellness space. I think people are starting wellness. To wear not only mental health, but physical health a whole lot more. So actually hot, cold plunge and saunas, right, along with kind of a gym space is actually really, really high on people's sort of wish lists. So when we're talking new trends, that's only been a thing in the last couple of years. So is it COVID related off the back of people really being locked down? Now on the Gold Coast, we didn't get locked down so much, but are we all a little bit more aware of our own mental health and our own kind of physical health? And are these more appealing? Are they literally just a bit of a trendy thing and may go out like maybe a media room once did? But they're certainly very high, and that is a new trend. When it comes to the architecture, I would say that I believe that I'm seeing sharp lines and kind of that masculinity coming back a little bit more. So we've just come through a phase of white and bright, very cool on the back of Hamptons. We've very much come through into this modern Mediterranean and a little bit of Palm Springs kind of stuff being thrown through.
Yeah.
But really, my cutting edge.
How long did Palm Springs last?
Look, depends who you ask. A beautiful Palm Springs will still be built today. And what we call Palm Springs versus what is the architecture of Palm Springs is very different. And I would say that was the same about Hamptons. Like with a weatherboard home with a couple of exposed trusses, people were on the Gold Coast were calling it Hamptons, and really Australia-wide. If you went over to the Hamptons, you would never see a home that looks like that. So I think
like triple gables, and they're proper Hamptons.
Or traditional, and old world homes. So, I think we're quick to jump onto a catchphrase or a design style that, just as a general public, we understand. And I think Palm Springs became one of those. The big white home that has a couple of curves and a couple of palm trees. There's no use fighting it, because if I have clients come into the office and their inspo is a Palm Springs style home, I kind of need to explain or try to work out what is their Palm Springs.
On the spectrum of Palm Springs, how far are we going to the one side? Are we just going to have one arch of a feature window above the front door and then just rendered white with a cactus in the front? Is that Palm Springs, or are we going hardcore?
Exactly right. So determining that is part of my job where the brief actually sits. There's a beautiful home we designed as a minimalist home once upon a time. It ended up very different to that, but minimalism was the original brief. I took it probably too far into minimalism. It's just part of our industry. I'm sure everyone sitting in my position has been in that. Hamptons was Hamptons. They thought minimalism was minimalism. We've got to work with our clients to work out what their true thinking of that style is.
Yeah, because we all interpret different things in a different way. And I guess for you to get it right, you really have to be specific on that, on what their vision is, what their thoughts are. And so going through that process, do you bring up some imagery? Do you kind of like initially early before you get to the hardcore design, do you kind of start fleshing some things out? Do you send them for a drive past this house or that house or some of your past work to kind of go, is this where you're thinking or is that where you're thinking? Or how do you kind of really button that down to sort of know exactly where they're heading?
couple of options. So generally it's ask them to only bring us two or three images because it will show us a direction. I always say, you bring me 50 images, it's just going to muddy the waters. Some people that works for. Others say there's a particular street in Kingscliff that we'd have 20 homes on one street. And they range from budgets of once upon a time, 550,000, all the way up to probably nowadays on the beach side to be $5 million builds. That will give us a really good cross-section of where our clients can go with design style, with construction budget, size of home. Acts like almost a little display village for us. So that's another thing we've got. It's anyone who wants to see our work in the flesh, Cylinders Drive is a place to go. You get it all in one street.
I see. Okay, that's a tip. Cylinders Drive is where you guys have done a lot of work.
Yeah. And as I say, there's probably 20, and we're running out of vacant blocks down there, but that number of 20 is actually growing still.
So it's interesting when we're talking about, you know, a Hampton style, a Palm Springs style, a minimal style, it's kind of out. Does it naturally our minds go to the facade and the exterior of the property when we're thinking about a design? Because ultimately you can have a Palm Springs facade and then internally it could be whatever. It's kind of, but it's a Palm Springs home. But so is that how people sort of naturally think? Do they think from the outside in, or do they say, you know, my main focus is the living and the in that zone, and then they kind of, the facade comes at an afterthought later? What's your sort of take around that on how people think about their designs and where they want to go with their properties?
We get both sets of clients who either come to us with, they might have a sketch of a floor plan with no idea of what they want to go with facade, or they may literally come to us with a design style in mind and say, Jace, take it from here. My process, though, is very much form and or functionality of a floor plan first, and then into aesthetic from there. They obviously need to mold together. Say we wanted a coastal home, or call it back to quintessential Hamptons almost. If we need gable ends, we need essentially a particular shape of floor plan to work with the gable ends. If you're going with something quite flat that's full contemporary, screens across the front, the floor plan needs to follow it a little bit. But to be honest, getting function of the floor plan right for clients is my absolute highest priority. And then we can always pretty much tweak a floor plan a little bit to start creating a particular look that they want.
Yeah, interesting. With my wife and I, we are kind of, we've got our debates on what facades that we would like, but our floor plan is something that we both agree on. And it's something that for us, we're kind of work in reverse too, where we're kind of really emphasis on having the perfect floor plan. And I guess when you're working with the site, floor plan has to really come first, right? Because if that floor plan doesn't suit that site, then it's not working.
Yeah, and you really can't come up with a floor plan until you've got the site, to be completely honest. And every one of our designs is literally started from scratch, new site, new design. And I don't believe that any of our sites really just are perfectly the same, whether it's different slope, whether it's a tiny bit of different orientation, different view. Obviously state to state we get different directions of breeze, so you name it, unless a house was literally side by side one, that's the only time you could ever almost mirror image, or not mirror image, copy and paste a floor plan, but then it won't be personalized to a client. So no matter whether it suits a site or not, they're still customized or personalized. So one site, north to water with the site next door, we may do something not completely different, but different to suit the particular family.
It's like, oh, Jason, just give me your standard 422 double story, mate. I just want to have that one over there put over here. And as a real estate agent, we get that a lot where people will go online, find the perfect floor plan, and then they're running around trying to find a block to stick that floor plan on, and they always seem disappointed. And I sort of say to them, hey guys, you know, you've got to get your lot first, and then start tweaking your floor plan. But it they feel it brings a bit of uncertainty to them. Well, what if I can't get what I want to suit that? I'm like, well, you know, that's that building process. You know, you've got to secure yourself a block of land, because otherwise it's only ever going to be a dream. Until you've got yourself a lot, you're not building anything. And do you find that with your clients as well, where they kind of, they really want to start, get stuck into design, but you're like, hang on a minute, you haven't bought yourself a block yet. How are we going with securing yourself a site? Or do you just go, I'll design you whatever you want, you can try and work it out later? What's your thoughts around that?
We give clients advice on particular sites. So before they've purchased and before we've started design, we can't design anything until we've got that site secured. But we have clients who will ring and say, Jace, I'm looking at this particular site. Do you think, or you know what my brief is, do you think we can make it work? I've got a particular client who knows a particular design shape that they would love to build. We're searching for a block that will service that particular shape. I'm on realestate.com daily working out not only clients, but what do I like? I work in the sort of, or operate the development space myself, separate to my work. So not only do I want to find a good site for me, I want to know what's out there for clients. I also want to keep a good eye on what things are selling for, whether it's blocks of land or new homes. Being able to guide my clients into valuable blocks of land with particular build budgets to kind of be able to sell or create equity. All of that is very, very important in my world. Other designers should be doing the same, in my opinion.
So end value for you is something that you really want to be educated on, not only for your own personal projects when you're crunching the numbers on the viability on doing this project's going to stack up, but also for your clients as well. So you can kind of, you know, have in the back of your mind, are we overcapitalizing here? Or you can have that faith in your heart that you're putting together something that is going to not only finish them with a great home, but they're going to also, you know, have a bit of equity or at least stack up the deal at the end.
Yeah, very much so. It's a very, very high priority of mine. And we try to bring not only builders with construction prices in early, but also even trusted real estate agents to have a look at what the concept might be. And obviously, this is all dependent on what the end goal for the client is. Is it a stepping stone to a dream home in 3 or 4 projects' time? Is it the dream home right now for 20 years? They're very different pathways and they're very different budgets. But setting those ground sort of rules or being very transparent with what our goals are is a super, super important aspect of the whole design to me.
Yeah, and look, you know, even if you're building something that's just to, you know, to live in for 20 years, still value's got to be a consideration, you know, I'm sure. And a lot of clients, likewise, in similar scenarios will come to me when they've got their design together and they'll say, oh, Brendan, you know, what do you think this is worth? It's kind of not a too crazy for me because I've got plenty of money. It's fine. But I just want to know that, you know, is this going to stack up? What's this going to be projected to be worth when it's completed? And we'll do appraisals certainly on that basis. And I find that people just want to know, you know, where it's going to be. And it's great that it's a consideration for yourself, because sometimes I get the vibe with builders, with designers and things, that's not really considered. Sometimes also what I notice, particularly with the cookie cutter designs and particularly the property investment space, I notice that livability just doesn't seem to be a thought as well, where, you know, I'll get the client says, hey, I just built this house, come check it out. I'll go and have a look at it. And the fourth bedroom is basically a cupboard. And they're like, it's a 422. I'm like, hang on a minute. This ain't no 422. Like, you know, you would have been better off having a 3-bedroom home with bigger living. It would have had much more of an impact than just than someone trying to sell you a 422 for the sake of it. This isn't livable at all. It just, you know, like the functionality's gone, and it's actually made it a bit of a, you know, bit of an ugly duckling. I'd imagine that's something that's hyper important to yourself as well. That if you see something that's just not going to be functional and livable, you got to be like, let's rethink this. What are we doing with this?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. All of that, at times I feel like clients may find me, I do it in a nice way, but brutal enough, because essentially I talk of a balancing beam. Most clients come with a budget, design sort of a wish list up here, a budget down here. I talk of balancing beam. Can we kind of compromise on the design a little bit to bring the budget up to balance out? We can go forward at that point. Do we have to bring the design right down to the budget? A lot of the time we do. Or are we sitting here and we can actually bring the budget right up to what meets the design? All of those scenarios that essentially can happen. Majority of the time, it's a little bit of both, but we talk of balancing that beam out so that you can move forward to construction.
When you say, you know, design here, budget here, is it just purely on a basis of square meterage that makes that design more expensive? Is it like, you know, we have to pare back on some of the fixtures and the fittings and the things like that? What can we play with there? What's the biggest factor? Is it just the square meterage, or is it the finishing, or the stones and things like that that kind of really have to play with?
It's a combination of it all. The overall size is probably the first port of call. When clients come in, I will sit with them and we'll talk about their design brief. And that, even just what you sort of dot points on a piece of paper, they straight away in my mind create essentially a subconscious size that I know the home will get towards. So say we've got a 5-bed, 5.5 bath, 3 living areas internal, alfrescos, pools. And, you know, so this is a larger than normal design brief. Say we're getting to that point, I know that we're going to tip 500 square meters. Soon as we tip 500 square meters, we talk about a budget with a client. Relative square meter rates for a nice design these days are 4,000 to 4,500 as a timber frame home. If we're over 500 square meters and we're talking of that budget, is the client willing to spend $2.5 million on a build? If they're not, straight away, here's some hard conversations. What are we compromising? Are we compromising on your brief, or are you compromising on your budget coming up? If we can't compromise on any, let's not go forward. You know, don't waste your time. Don't waste your money. You need to start to exhaust some other avenues of how you might do this, because custom build may not be for you. They're hard conversations for some, but they're important conversations.
Essential.
Yeah.
Yeah. And essential to get done early, you know, like I think. And no, that's great. What do you see? Where do you see the luxury market heading over the next year? So obviously we talked about some of those trends where straight lines are coming back in and things. Where do you see the luxury market going over the next 12 months, taking into consideration the availability of lots, construction costs, things like that? What do you forecast for the market over the next 12 months?
Here on the Gold Coast, I forecast strength. We're sort of been going from strength to strength. Southern migration's been a big, big sort of factor in that. A lot of my clients are Victorians or Sydney siders moving up, have sold up expensive properties, have got plenty of money to play with. I think Gold Coast real estate's been undervalued for a long time. We're catching up. We're still not anywhere near some of, you know, the eastern suburbs of Sydney or like the Toorak that you mentioned earlier. So with the southern migration, with remote working becoming a thing, I think our market still has somewhere to go. Obviously, that's in the little bubble we live in with the sort of high-end property. Don't get me wrong, there's some pain out there for sort of the lower end of the market. Does that over time affect the high end? Most probably. I'm certainly no economist, but I try to keep a good understanding of it all. But, you know, inquiry is still very high for us. We're a growing business in a space that is still very strong. So over the next 6 months, I've got no doubt that we're still in a very strong position, 12, 24. I think that migration to the Gold Coast will continue, which will just, you know, the supply versus demand kind of debate will keep things very strong at that top end.
Yeah, it's interesting perspective that you had. And that's why I was really curious to get your thoughts on that, because you're finding out, knowing of these projects, these homes, these properties a year in advance, because you're at the site acquisition, you're talking in the terms of the that individual that's making that plan of that move and things. So and the stuff that you're working on is going to be the perhaps the properties that come to the market and the new homes are going to be emerging over the next 12 to 18 months. So it's interesting to get your insight on that. And I agree with you. I haven't had anybody on the show that disagrees that the prestige top end of the market isn't going to go from strength to strength. I certainly share that view as well, because I believe myself that the interest rates, the factors of the economy and things probably aren't as affecting the top end of town perhaps as much as the bottom end of town. Was that sort of your feeling as well? Is that where you're going with that? That, you know, these people still have plenty of money. They're still selling their property in Toorak to move to the Gold Coast, or plenty of money in the eastern suburbs and things. So they're not feeling the effects as much as those interest rate rises and things.
Yeah, absolutely. So the majority of our clients are now probably self-funded. You take interest rates right out of it for them. They've got cash in the bank. They're building beautiful homes. So they're buying, selling, you know, or developing whatever they're doing. These interest rates aren't the one. They're not the people that they're hurting. I don't know much about, you know, global crisis starting to affect markets, those sort of things. It's probably the only thing that's sort of on, you know, everyone's peripheral at the moment that could very well take a hold, and maybe economies crash because of wars overseas. But I'm not one to speculate on that. From what I see, the prestige home market's super, super strong. Lots of people want to get involved. The Gold Coast is only so big and wide. So here locally, I don't think we have anything to worry about.
And in terms of getting a site now, it really has to be a teardown, doesn't it? Because it's not, you know, there's not that much waterfront land, or there's virtually no waterfront land left. And you know, there's the odd, you know, beachfront, maybe the odd kind of, you know, waterfront site that's left that has been tightly held forever, and they just never seem to sell it. So, you know, your clients, if they want to get that north to water dream property, they're going to have to buy something and knock it over, right?
Pretty much, yeah. And I think timing of my career has been a lucky one. We've sort of, the Gold Coast and the homes that were built through the 70s and 80s really were never the homes that would last or stand the test of time. So timing of my career has very much coincided with the timing of all of those homes of the 70s and 80s builds becoming really a block of dirt. So
yeah.
You literally looked at the map of the Gold Coast and put, call it a green dot on every home that's truly a block of land. We've actually still got a lot of blocks of land available, but they're how we look at them, not as pretty much a house that can be renovated. Name one other city in the world where these blocks of land exist in the inner city that are really achievable in price point to build a really beautiful home on. You know, we don't have heritage listing here for residential. You know, you go to Melbourne or Sydney, where the places people want to live, you can't just go and buy a block of dirt. You're buying a problem child. You know, these homes have...
It's a block of dirt that just so happens to have an old house on it. We could solve that.
And you know what? And you can't knock over. You might have to, you know, maintain the facade. There's so many problems that come with those.
Yeah.
Crazily enough, on the Gold Coast, a lot of our sites, people just need to see as blocks of dirt.
Yeah, true. True. No, well, it's been really interesting, mate. And this is the stage that we come to in our interviews where we like to get to know our guests a little bit better, and we have a bit of a favorites quiz, so if you're ready to go, let's jump into that.
Absolutely.
Favorite movie, mate?
I'm gonna say Miracle in Cell Number 7. Certainly won't be one that anyone knows of.
I definitely haven't. No,
it was given to me by a really close friend, ex-client and mentor of mine. Look it up. It's actually in another language, so it's a read-along,
right.
Really heartwarming movie. So there's one for you on a rainy night.
Awesome. Great tip. Favorite food?
Favorite food. Unfortunately for me, it's anything probably deep fried. Otherwise, if I went onto the healthy side, I'd probably say the rump cap at Moomoo's. If I had my last dinner, probably the rump cap at Moomoo's.
There you go. And favorite holiday destination?
In the past, or from holidays taken, I would say Santorini. Cannot beat a sunset with a kebab from down the street and a bottle of wine.
I haven't got there yet myself. That's on my wish list. But what about aspirational holiday destination?
Aspirational. I think Japan's next on my young family's list. But a fresh little baby girl of 3 weeks old and a two-year-old, so Hamilton Island will be the holiday destination probably the next 2 or 3 years, I'd say.
Our last guest, her aspirational holiday destination was Japan as well. So a lot of Aussies are looking to Japan. I saw on socials that it's kind of the new Aussie destination now to go to Japan. So that's interesting. Mm. What's a typical day for you look like?
At the moment, with a three-week-old at home, pretty chaotic. But typical day in the office is just trying to find a balance point between as many meetings as are requested, balancing them out with obviously time in front of the computer, trying to get through design and then obviously run a business. So very much
real estate and real estate agents hassling you to do podcasts and give all your tips and your information.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to be on here. It's all good.
Most embarrassing moment, mate?
It's always a tough one. I haven't had many major ones, so I'll say something that I've done on a golf course, and I'm sure I've got plenty of play golf with. They can say that I've done probably some pretty interesting things with a golf ball in my years.
Oh, cool. And if you could have dinner with any inspirational person, dead or alive, who would it be?
I'll keep it pretty close to home and alive. I'd say my dad. Obviously inspirational man. Outside of that, probably the mentor that I mentioned earlier about the movie recommendation, Rick Jamieson from Harry the Hira fame. Just a great guy. I can turn to him with any concern I've got through business, and so keep close to home and maybe both of those guys.
Yeah, fantastic. A lot of people have said dad, you know, that's interesting. That's interesting. Biggest regret? Do you have any regrets, mate? Is there a regret out there, something that perhaps, you know, if you wish you'd done sooner or anything like that?
Yeah, I spent a lot of years playing football, which is a winter sport. Probably biggest regret, not travelling enough when I was young. European summers were just off the cards playing football. So maybe it's a regret, but obviously I'm very proud of what, you know, those years of football created as well. So regret, maybe not.
Maybe like the backpacker, you know, 1920 kind of just, you know, what, not worrying about anything, just doing the Europe and backpacking sort of trip?
Never did the Kentucky tour. Look back and think would have been a whole heap of fun. But, you know, that's a European summer, so it just wasn't available to us.
My stepdad told me when I was that age, he said, "Brennan, mate, you're getting real serious out of school and you want to get a job and you want all these things." He goes, "Just take a year off, go and do the Europe thing." And I kind of felt like, but you've been telling me all this time I've got to get my act together and I've got to focus about my future. And I feel like right now I just want to get out of home and I want to get a job and start working. I'll get to that. You know, I'm only, you know, 18, 19, I never got a chance to do it. And now I look back and it reminds me of that. And when I chat with, you know, a lot of friends and obviously guests, everyone talks about that gap year trip as something that they regret that they didn't do. So you're not the only one, mate, that plays on their mind. And I'm definitely going to be recommending it to my son when he's old enough too.
Yeah.
Most thankful for?
I'd say family. I've got two beautiful daughters at home, so very much in that sort of baby bubble at the moment. I've got a beautiful wife, two gorgeous daughters. What's more? What more do you need?
So we do it all for, right? The fam. Just, you know, work's chaotic and crazy and we do all these things that personally and professionally want to aspire for, but really we do it for the kids, right?
Absolutely.
If you're Prime Minister for the day, and this is a big question, this sometimes stumps people. We're interested to get your thoughts, mate, but if you were Prime Minister for the day, what's just one thing that you would change?
Yeah, rather than getting deep, I think I would, you know, I could talk tax laws, I could talk, you know, no one wants to hear it. I think let's go mandatory 3-day weekend.
I like it. Yeah.
A bit more work-life balance. Don't get me wrong. We all have businesses. We all need to. We need bums on seats. We need hours spent working. But at times, you know what, when we get that long weekend like Australia Day we just had, hey, we all come back a whole lot fresher. So maybe mandatory 4-day week.
mate, I think people would vote for you on that promise. I don't think you'd have a hassle at all getting into office on that one, mate. And I think a lot of businesses are starting to trial this 4-day week. And so I know some public servants are dipping their toe into that. And I definitely feel that our productivity, you know, is still going to be at a good level. I don't think it's going to, you know, change too much. And we seem to have a lot of long weekends. So why not just fill the gaps up and just make it into a whole year thing, right?
Why not? Even though I know that a 9-day fortnight is starting to become more a thing, especially even in our local council. I don't mind that. I think it's getting all businesses to align, though, because you go to a 4-day week and your consultants are working on a Friday, you guys aren't. That's probably the biggest fall down. We all need to do it together.
Yep. No, well, mate, your insights have been amazing and I do really appreciate your time. Young family, work, all these things. So it's very appreciative of me to have you here, mate. So thank you so much. How would our audience get in contact with you? Perhaps they're thinking about doing a bespoke home, or they have some ideas in a project. They've, as you said, you know, you can help your clients find a site and go through this whole process. If someone is listening today that is in that space and needs the service of a great designer, how would they get in contact with you?
I'd say jump on the website. My phone number's there. Give me a call. I'll shoot me an email. Let's get in touch. Let's have a chat and let's see what you have in mind.
Fantastic. And I'll put those links below and to your socials as well. So I think another great way for the audience to get to know your work is to jump onto your Instagram and check out the images of the concept designs that are there. I've also noticed there's obviously completed properties as well. So it's not all just, concepts, you're genuinely completed projects there, which I think is a great as well. A lot of designers are obviously following the space too. I seem to see all these concepts, but never actually get to see a completed property. So that's one thing I really loved about your socials. And I think your audience do too, because you got quite a strong following. So I'll put all those links below for you.
Excellent.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brennan. Appreciate the time.